The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Taxes show.
Did you know that I have a brown lizard I call Mr. Chocolate Choo Choo?
Eric asked me never to talk about Mr. Chocolate Choo Choo on the air.
But I know that he'll overlook it just this one time. Because Mr. Chocolate Choo Choo said he would, and Mr. Choo Choo never, ever lies.
Unlike Eric.
And now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Mr. Chocolate Choo Choo?
Tasty.
That's a little weird. I just got to tell you, folks, we enjoy doing this show because we talk about everything. It's the show about everything.
Everything.
And the show about everything includes comedy, history, politics, faith. Oh, we don't shrink from faith,
no.
Ladies and gentlemen. No. What do we shrink from?
I don't know.
Nothing. Nothing. We try to talk about everything
okay. On
the show. We try to do it with humor and civility, and we often fail. But
yes. We
believe in grace and forgiveness, and we're sorry when we fail.
Sorry.
We hope we don't fail too often. Alvin, there's a lot. There's always a lot to talk about. I wanted, in case people, there are two things.
Yes.
In case people have not yet given to CSI, I want people to understand that you must give to CSI. It doesn't matter what you give, folks. It doesn't matter what you give, but please give something. You go to MetaxasTalk.com. What do we charge you for this show? Not a lot.
Nada.
Just think of this as a way to give back. It doesn't come to us. It goes to people suffering horribly in a part of the world where, trust me, you wouldn't want to live. And CSI helps those people. So you go to MetaxasTalk.com. You'll see the banner. We really just want to say, get the kids involved. Give this in somebody's name if you can, because not everybody needs another sweater or another whatever. Say I gave $50 or $200 in your name to this organization that frees slaves in Africa. This is real. This is real. Imagine, folks, we don't want to imagine in the West the evil that's in this world, the evil that happens to people. It didn't happen in history where we can forget about it. It's happening this minute, which means we have an obligation to do something about it. The question is what? I'll leave that between you and God, but I'm going to give you the opportunity right now to give to a great organization, and you can do as you like. It's CSI. You just go to our website, MetaxasTalk.com. And to those of you who have given, I will never be able to thank you enough. This is God's work. This is absolutely...
Thank you so much,
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So that's one thing, is to say, if you haven't given yet, you must give. If you haven't seen the TBN Christmas special...
Yes.
Folks, how can I possibly say how crazy this Christmas special is? People aren't going to believe it. They're going to say, I don't understand. I'm a little confused. Folks, that's the point. We're here to confuse you and entertain you.
And
so
we've succeeded,
yes.
Oh, yeah.
TBN.org, if you need to find out information on you know, how to watch this, you can actually watch it online at TBN.org. But it's on TV. You can watch it on your 60-inch screen with the whole family. You can invite the neighbors. This is not religious programming. This is just a fun Christmas special. Now, obviously, because of where I'm coming from, I want to honor Jesus. Jesus is the reason for the season. And we certainly don't shy away from that.
No.
But it's not the kind of thing that's going to make you uncomfortable if you have relatives who are atheist or secular or politically liberal or whatever. This is not about that. This is about, it's like an old-fashioned Christmas special like you'd have with Bob Hope or whatever. Hopefully, it's funny. You know, it's not just cornball old stuff, because I hate that stuff and I wouldn't watch it. So we try to make it really funny. And some of it is very, very funny. My friend Chris Himes, who's a producer on this program, and you've known him for years if you're paying attention to the program. But Chris wrote some of these sketches.
Yeah.
And when I read it, I really thought, you know what? This is actually funny. It's not like sort of funny. Like this is really brilliant. And I do a character, a Greek character, which is based on more than 50 years of experience among Greeks, right? Because that's my world. And I'm telling you, you've just got to watch it just for that. If you have a Greek friend, if you have any friend that is Greek and you do not share this with them, someday they're going to find out And they're going to say, why didn't you share this with me? That's because Greeks, there's no Greek humor. There's Italian humor. There's Jewish humor. We see this stuff. But I got to tell you, this Greek character, it's based on a late friend of my dad's who is the basis for this character. And it's very real, and it's insane, and you just got to watch it. And if you
still know folks from the old country, whether it's Italy or Poland or something, you're going to see some of that in there.
Well, that I was going to say, Annie, you'll see that. But the Greeks, man, but I grew up with that. It takes the cake. So, but you can't miss it. The name of the character is Dr. Haralambos Hamilokoulos. Hamilokoulos is the surname. Haralambos is the, so they call him Dr. Harry, but You gotta watch it. If you know anybody who's Greek, you just have to share that with them. We're going to try to make this available online so you can share pieces of it. But the TBN.org would be the place to go to check it out. And you know what? We flew down.
That's right.
To Louisiana,
West Monroe.
We filmed part of this with the Duck Dynasty folks at their home. Phil Robertson, Miss Kay. These are some of the most wonderful people I've ever met. Salt of the earth. Yep. Honest to goodness, good, godly human beings, absolutely wonderful people. They couldn't have been more generous with their time, and they cooked food for us and stuff. We had a great time. But Phil Robertson and I filmed some stuff, and if you haven't seen it yet, I don't want to spoil it, but trust me when I tell you, you're going to be surprised. Yeah. Let's put it that way. You will definitely, I don't care who you are, where you're coming from, you will be surprised. It's part of the TBN special.
And your reaction to a shotgun blast is just priceless.
Let me just say, like, ladies and gentlemen, I did not see that coming. Yeah. And when you see my reaction, you're going to know that's not acting.
I know. It's very funny.
You're not going to know. We did a music video with Phil and Miss K. Yeah. This is a real down-to-earth 1987-style music video.
Yeah.
And there's a character named Gully. Now, Gully is the Robertsons adopted Gully when they found him after a storm. They actually found him after a flash flood in a gully. And they raised him as their own.
Yeah.
And because they found him in a gully, they named him Gully. And he now sings in a roadhouse in a different part of Louisiana. We caught up with Gully. And he performs under the stage name Duck Owens.
Mm.
Duck Owens, not Buck Owens, Duck Owens. And I think you'll enjoy Gully's performance because I said, you know, we want to capture the flavor of a different part of the country. So the whole theme is Christmas in New York.
Yes.
So Phil Robertson comes to New York, and we film most of it. We film here, but we also filmed part of it down there.
And when he talks about the true meaning of Christmas, and you guys are in that boat and all that, and, oh, my God, it's very beautiful.
There's nobody like Phil Robertson. No. I mean, if you invite your friends over, and that's the only time they hear anything about God, is about a two-minute thing that Phil Robertson says in the duck boat. I'm with him in the duck boat. It's a week before duck hunting season, so we're not blasting any ducks. But let me tell you something. He is absolutely amazing. What comes out of his mouth, you just go, wow, that's wisdom, absolute wisdom. And he shares some stuff. So the whole thing is sheer lunacy. We had a great time. And I want to say we're going to be producing more holiday specials along the lines of this. So if you like this, we would love to hear from you. You can email TBN. In fact, you should email TBN, or you can find me or whatever. But we'd love to hear from you if you've enjoyed it or what you liked. And the song that Duck Owens performs is kind of like the Buck Owens song, Daddy Looked a Lot Like Santa.
Oh.
Daddy looked a lot like Santa. Santa looked a lot like him. It's not the way I had him pictured. Santa was a much too thin. You know, it's a classic Buck Owens. But Gully sings it as this character, Duck Owens. Anyway, it's just nuts. So we want to tell you, go to TBN.org. You can either watch it there or you can find out there more about it. Or just go, you know, it'll tell you where and when it's playing in your neck of the woods. But TBN is everywhere across America. Like 95% of the cable packages, if not 100, carry TBN. So that's it. So we're going to go out with that lovely Duck Owens hit, Daddy Looked a Lot Like Santa. Stick around.
It's not the way I had him pictured. Santa was a much too thin. He didn't come down the chimney, so Mama must have let him in. Santa looked a lot like Daddy. Our Daddy looked a lot like him. Well, they thought I was fast asleep, and they thought I was tucked in bed. They never thought that I'd come a peeping
that I'd hear.
If you would like to contact CSI, dial 888-253-3522. That's 888-253-3522.
Folks, that's Fleetwood Mac, American Taxes, and we are going to ask the question and answer it. The question is, did America have a Christian founding? That's the title of a brand new book, Did America Have a Christian Founding? Separating Modern Myth from Historical Truth. The author, Mark David Hall, is the Herbert Hoover Distinguished Professor of Politics and Faculty Fellow in the William Penn Honors Program at George Fox University. He's also affiliated with Emory and Baylor, and he's my guest right now via Skype. Welcome, Mark David Hall, to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Eric.
I know that you're in a bunker in Texas as we speak, and I love Skype because it's like I feel like you're here. I was excited about this book and excited about getting you on. It's a brand new book. The question, of course, did America have a Christian founding? So tell us, I mean, did America have a Christian founding? What do you say about it in this book?
I say that the answer is unequivocally yes, but I think we do have to define what we mean by Christian and then founding. And to make a long story short, I argue that primarily I'm interested in terms of Christian influences upon America's founders. Now, of course, 98% are Protestant, 2% are Roman Catholics. You have about 2,500 Jews in 4 or 5 American cities, but overwhelmingly, it's a Christian people. But far more important than that, I think, are the Christian ideas that had a profound impact on America's founders as they broke from Great Britain and created America's constitutional order.
Well, so talk about that. In other words, I think that there are people who have already misheard you and who want to frame the question wrongly and say, does this mean America is a Christian nation? And we would be the first to say, I think, well, no, not officially. And that's the point. If you're not officially a Christian nation, you are then free, thanks to the Constitution and thanks to the separation of church and state, to be a genuinely Christian nation. In other words, to espouse the ideas that are born from the Bible. So what do we mean when we say that the ideas from the scripture gave birth to a nation that believed in a kind of freedom that had not ever been practiced before? How do we get that from the Bible? How did they get that from the Bible?
Sure. So I address this in a number of chapters. I'll give just one clear example. I think by the time we get to the late 18th century, America's founders, almost to a person, without exception of which I'm aware, had come to the conclusion that religious liberty for all citizens must be robustly protected. And they came to this conclusion not because they were Enlightenment rationalists or not because they were simply pragmatic leaders, but because of their Christian convictions. They, do unto others as you would have done unto you. Well, I don't want someone to force me to bow down and worship Allah, so I should not force a Muslim to bow down and worship Allah. And the arguments are more sophisticated than that, but that's just one of them.
No, but that's incredibly important. I just don't want my audience to miss this most important point. In other words, what you're saying and what I know I have said is that it is a unique thing that out of the Christian faith comes the idea of religious liberty, and Christians have often gotten this wrong. But if you get the Bible right, you realize that religion, faith, can never be imposed. When it is imposed, it is a false faith, and that our founders in America understood that because of the Bible. So there's an irony here. In other words, it's the opposite of theocracy. And I think a lot of people get confused when you talk about Christian, the Christian founding of America, or you talk about the Christian founders, or you talk about us being a Christian nation on any level. They think it means theocracy, which is precisely the opposite of what they intended.
You know, that's exactly right. So Article 6 bans religious tests for federal office. Many states are moving away from religious tests. One of my favorite letters that I quote twice is George Washington's letter to the Hebrew congregation in Newport, Rhode Island, where he makes it crystal clear that Jews, just like everyone else, have the ability to worship God and to act upon their religious convictions. There's no distinction, according to Washington. I think all the founders agreed with that.
Well, it's interesting because I think that there are religions, in other words, certain strains of Islam desire theocracy. And I think that certain strain, I think that the Catholic Church a while ago, no longer, but had a similar view that it was kind of about imposing a theocracy or leaning in that direction until you could impose a theocracy. But somehow the Christian faith says no, or I should say the traditional Christian faith says no, it can never be imposed and we must never strive to impose it. But ironically, by not striving to impose it, we think we're creating the best way for it to flourish.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So one of my favorite discussions is I address a question, if America had a Christian founding, why are states moving towards disestablishing the state churches? 9 of the 13 colonies had established churches. And if you look carefully at those debates, you find by far and away the primary reasons given is that establishments hurt true Christianity. We want true Christianity to flourish. Therefore, we need to get the government out of the business of regulating ecclesiastical government, regulating the church, even subsidizing the church. These things are all bad for the church. Get the government out of this business, and then Christianity will flourish. And pretty much everyone agreed this is a good thing. Even those relatively few founders who themselves were not Orthodox Christians, they still wanted Christianity to flourish because they recognized that led to a lot of good things.
Well, so talk to us some more about the founders and their vision for a Christian America, which really was a vision for a free America, because I think a lot of times we focus on a few of the founders and neglect to see that all of them had this view of religious liberty and liberty.
That's exactly right. So in terms of there's book after book written on the religious belief of America's founders, and most of them say most of America's founders were deists. And this is just an utterly ridiculous argument. So the way they get to this is they focus on the four founders who became president, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, usually Ben Franklin, Alexander Hamilton, and then they throw in a favorite or two, maybe a Tom Paine or Ethan Allen. Well, this is just a perversely unrepresentative sample, even though these are all great Americans who deserve to be studied. So of this example, all of them, with the exception of John Adams, are worshiping at Anglican churches by the end of their lives, if they aren't lifelong Anglicans. And yet only 15% of Americans in this era are Anglican, 50 to 75% are Calvinist, and they're almost completely unrepresented in this sample. John Adams is the only representative, and he's not a particularly good Calvinist. And then you look at someone like a Franklin, who lived half of the last 35 years of his life in Europe. Jefferson and Adams lived significant time in Europe. Hamilton and Paine weren't born in America. So again, I'm not trying to take anything away from the greatness of these men, but to think they represent the views of America's political class is just ridiculous. But even when we drill into these men, we find that, strictly speaking, as deism is oftentimes defined, maybe none of them are deist, because they all talk about God intervening in the affairs of men and nations. Even if we can see that maybe a Jefferson did that just as a matter of rhetoric, that still gives us only one or two, maybe three deists among the civic leaders in America's founding.
Well, all you have to do is think about Benjamin Franklin's speech at the Constitutional Convention, about Jesus' words of a sparrow not falling to the ground. I mean, it is very clear that although somebody like Franklin maybe never declared himself to be a traditional historical Christian, that in effect he was. In other words, you really people are straining at gnats sometimes theologically, because they want to paint a picture of him as a deist, and I see all kinds of evidence that says no, he's not. I mean, his friendship with George Whitefield to begin with, I mean, the idea that he was some kind of a confirmed deist is wishful thinking. It's just not true. And it's just like Abraham Lincoln, just because they never very officially and carefully declared their theological views, people think, well, they didn't have any theological views. And it's absolute nonsense. I mean, their lives, Lincoln, on the one hand, he wasn't a founder, of course, but Franklin, they seem to have a biblical worldview, maybe with some caveats, but basically that was where they were coming from.
You know, I think that's exactly right. Franklin, in his autobiography, said that as a young man, I fell under the spell of the deist, but I very quickly recognized this was a dangerous doctrine. And he seems to have moved away from it. In the speech that you referenced, he actually specifically says, the longer I live, the more I see that God governs the affairs of men, and then suggests that they invite clergymen into pray. Roger Sherman of Connecticut, an old Puritan, nobody questions his sincerity and his orthodoxy, immediately seconded Franklin's proposal. Now, the delegates didn't act on this because they thought that bringing in a clergy at that stage could lead to a lot of disruption in the public. But I think it's absolutely—I think you're absolutely right. And of course, we can recognize what we know. People change as they grow older.
Let me just cut you off there briefly. We're going to be right back, folks. I'm talking to Mark David Hall. He's the author of Did America Have a Christian Founding? Very important stuff. Folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show on Skype. In case you're watching this and not just listening to it, we have Mark David Hall, the author of Did America Have a Christian Founding? Very important book. Mark David Hall, what in this book will we find that we might not have read elsewhere?
It's definitely out there, but I think every American needs to know that the American founders did not desire to build a wall of separation between church and state. Since 1947, progressive Supreme Court justices have pretended that it does, and they've used this wall to limit the religious liberty of certain Americans, of limiting the ability of Americans of faith to participate in certain programs. And they need to know that there's just absolutely no good historical reason to accept the claim that America's founders desired to build a wall of separation between church and state.
Now, when you say that, in other words, my understanding of the wall of separation is that that there is a wall to protect the church from the state. So that is a fact, and that was Jefferson's understanding in the letter to the Danbury Baptists, and that he was never declaring that we need to have a cultural realm scrubbed free of Christian influence. It was simply that we need to protect churches and people of faith from Leviathan, from the state, which will seek to impose its will on people of faith.
There's so much truth in that statement. One of my favorite stories in the book is 2 days after Jefferson finished his draft of the letter to the Danbury Baptist, he went to church services in the U.S. Capitol building, where he heard John Leland, the great Baptist itinerant minister and himself an opponent of established churches, preach. Jefferson also allowed the Treasury Department and the War Department to be used for religious services. And I give a number of other examples that show even Jefferson did not think there really should be a wall of separation between church and state, even though he used the metaphor, which I think is an unfortunate metaphor because it's so misleading.
But I guess my question or maybe my understanding is that when he says a wall of separation, he means something that we would agree with. In other words, it's not to keep the church out of things. It's to keep the state out of meddling in church affairs. And that the reason you need this separation is that if you don't have it, it is the state that will impose its will on the people of faith. So he was not, when he said that, he was not anti-Christian religion. He was effectively pro-Christian religion. He was pro-religion in general. And obviously Tocqueville concurs with this 50 years later that this was the rare thing, is that by separating these things, they can work together in harmony in a way that if we blur them together and we have some kind of a theocracy, they really can't. Eventually, power will take over. By keeping it free, by giving us religious liberty, it enables the churches to flourish. And that's what's, to my mind, so dramatic about the founding.
I think that's right. What I don't like about the wall metaphor is immediately people's minds conjure up a big wall with the church on one side and the state on the other. And of course, a wall is a bilateral barrier, whereas the words of the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, and by extension now the states, is clearly only a restriction on the legislature, on the government, not on the people, not on churches. There is in no way, shape, or form that the Constitution limits the ability of people of faith to participate in the public square. It's right. Absolutely aimed at protecting churches.
Right. And Father Richard John Newhouse, in his book, The Naked Public Square, was 1984, whenever that was published. But, I mean, he makes that case that this is it was never meant. The idea of a separation between church and state was never meant to keep Christian faith out of the public square. And there's a great irony in that misunderstanding, because, of course, we've seen, if anything, the state continually impose its worldview, which to my mind is the establishment of a religion. It's just a religion that doesn't have an official name or an official membership, but it's a worldview that has fixed ideas about the ultimate questions of what the human person is and when life begins and human sexuality, and that they are imposing that with the power of the state on people of faith, and we're seeing abrogations of our religious liberty as a result of that.
No, I think that's exactly right. I do think Jefferson and Madison wanted a stricter separation of church and state than others, although even with them, I think primarily they were concerned with protecting the church in true Christianity. But when you turn from them to the rest of the founding generation, a very different picture comes into focus. So I can give one more story. The day after Congress, the House, passes the language that became the First Amendment, Elias Boudinot said, hey, why don't we ask President Washington to issue a Thanksgiving Day proclamation? Adonais Burke said, oh, we can't do that. That's a European practice. Roger Sherman, this Puritan from Connecticut, said, no, it's okay. It's a biblical practice. The House agreed with Boudinot and Sherman. The Senate agreed with the House. And George Washington issued his wonderfully theologically rich Thanksgiving Day proclamation in 1789, which I would encourage your listeners and viewers to go look up. It's a wonderful call for prayer.
Well, we just got about 40 seconds in this segment. Tell us more about that, because I don't remember much about Washington's Thanksgiving Day proclamation.
Basically, it says we have to give thanks to God, who is a provider of all that is good in this world. He goes on to say we as a nation need to beg his forgiveness for our sins. And then he encourages the people to pray on a particular day in November. Nobody's forced to pray. That's very important. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with the president of the United States encouraging people to pray. And, of course, most presidents have followed suit.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, you want to talk about a clear evidence that George Washington was not a deist. I mean, it's almost hilarious, but we have to keep making this case. We'll be right back. Final segment with Mark David Hall, the author of Did America Have a Christian Founding? Don't go away. Hey, folks, Eric Metaxas here. There's something you all need to know about Relief Factor and about Pete and Seth Talbot, the father and son owners. As you know, they're on a real mission to help as many people as possible get out of pain, and they've been a consistent sponsor of the show for several years in radio. Sponsors come and go. They may even stay for a year or so. It sounds like they're doing super, and then they're gone. Well, not so with Relief Factor. Pete and Seth are consistent year after year, and that's because tens of thousands of people are now taking Relief Factor every day for their back and neck pain. I'm one of them. Shoulder pain, knee pain, hip pain. And they are now in less or no pain at all. All these people, it's as simple as that. It works. That's why I've joined Pete and Seth on their mission to help you get out of pain today. And the first step is to order the 3-week quick start pack for $19.95. If you're still skeptical, remember, it's not just me. There are tens of thousands of other nice people who would happily tell you to give it a try. It can be done. It can be at your door in just 2 to 3 days. Go to relieffactor.com. Remember, relieffactor.com. It works. It works.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? We could float among the stars together, you and I. For we can fly.
Hey there, folks. That's the Fifth Dimension. They are rocketing up the charts. The young people just love them, and that's why we play their music on this program. I'm talking to the author of Did America Have a Christian Founding, Mark David Hall. I have to ask you, Mark David Hall, most people don't understand, and I want you to talk about this because I know you talk about it in your book, but this question of whether the founders believed that the government should encourage faith and religion, and particularly Christian religion. It seems to me very clear that they did. But what do you say in your book about that? Because a lot of people today, as you said, they paint the founders as deists, that somehow they didn't want religion, which is completely untrue. But tell us how they believed that the government could and should encourage faith somehow without doing so officially or without mandating faith.
Sure. Here I think we have to distinguish between the federal government and the state governments. I think most founders thought the national government should actually have very little to do with this. It might do something. It might have legislative chaplains, military chaplains, presidential calls for prayer and Thanksgiving and this sort of thing. But generally, it would be up to the state governments to decide whether or not there would be an established church, whether or not parents would be required to catechize their children, whether or not the states would require households to have Bibles. And some states did this, or towns did this. They required families to have Bibles and catechisms. Other states didn't. But this would be left up to the states, as would most morals legislation. When you turn and look at the founding generation, what you see from north to south is pretty much everyone thought it was a good thing for the government to encourage Christianity. Now, some states were turning away from established churches, but that's for exactly the same reason I'm sure you and I oppose established churches, because they hurt true Christianity. So we don't want the government regulating the church, running the church, even subsidizing the church.
Well, it is a funny thing, because when you talk about states, we have really, really fallen so far from this federalist view that the states are supposed to hold power and they're supposed to be have some measure of sovereignty. I mean, we've really fallen so far from that view. And that, to me, is at the heart of why we're slipping away from this real understanding of what it is to keep the republic.
No, I think you're exactly right. In my chapter on the quote-unquote godless constitution, I suggest that we don't have a godless constitution because the authors of the Constitution were self-consciously drawing from Christian ideas. One of the central ones, of course, is that humans are sinful, that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Even redeemed Christians struggle with the old man within. And so they were very wary of concentrated powers. That's why they gave the national government so limited powers. As well, they even within the national government had separation of powers, checks and balances, and things like this. Since 1936, the national government has run amok, and America's founders, with the exception maybe of an Alexander Hamilton and James Wilson, I think all the rest of the founders would have said, this is crazy. We have got to rein in the power of the national government and get back to something resembling the federalism of the original constitutional design.
It's sometimes hard for me to accept that early on there were states that would be willing to have an established church, or that, you know, it's a funny thing to think back that far and to realize that the states had so much power that they could even differ on that issue, which we think of as utterly central to what it is to be an American, that people have religious liberty within the state as well as within the nation.
I think that's right. I think sometimes scholars over-exaggerate the extent to which religious liberty was lacking in the early colonies. It's true that some colonies banned Quakers and banned Jesuits, but they did so because they saw them as being threats to the public order. But even pretty rapidly in the 17th century, states got rid of those sorts of laws, or colonies did, and embraced a fairly robust understanding of religious liberty. Not a 21st century understanding, but they were definitely making significant progress, such that by the time we got to the late 18th century, the founding generation really understood the importance of religious liberty for all.
It is an amazing thing, because in my book about Martin Luther, you know, you see how the seeds are there, but Luther clearly didn't get this idea that you have, you know, you have Catholic territories and then you've got Lutheran territories, and they could understand religious liberty geographically, right? That this state is allowed to exist as a Lutheran state, and that, you know, the emperor would allow that, you know, sort of pragmatically and stuff. But to go to that next step, it really takes, you know, 250 years more before we get that here in the United States. I would argue that it really does come out of the Bible, that it comes out of the Christian view of reality. But it's interesting how it takes its time to work its way through history before you actually get what we call religious liberty.
Sure. I think there's a natural temptation to use the power of the state to promote what you consider to be true Christianity. And, yeah, of course, you could think I'm saving souls by doing so. But I think history shows us that almost the exact opposite is true, that this ends up corrupting the church. And so we're far better to get the government out of the business of promoting Christianity and to allow Christianity to compete with other faiths on its own terms.
And I mean, it seems to me that, that's the idea behind all freedom, right? That the idea of freedom is that we think that it will lead to the best best culture, to the best world, but we can't force it. Like somehow we've figured out that we have to be free, otherwise there is no chance. That if you try to guarantee this, if the power of the state tries to impose it, you'll almost inevitably wreck it. And that, you know, history has proved that to be correct.
I think that's exactly right. Of course, no freedom is absolute. So even religious liberty, we say we're going to keep you from acting upon your religious beliefs if you want to sacrifice a baby to the sun god or something like that. But within those sorts of constraints, we find that Christianity flourishes under freedom. We find that economies flourish under free markets, and on and on you can go. So, yeah, absolutely. Freedom wins.
And of course, at the center of it all is you have to have a virtuous citizenry. You have to have, you know, the free market will deliver, just like the democratic process of voting. You can elect the devil or you can elect Hitler. So it's not guaranteed. And just as the free market will give us what we want, it won't give us what's best for us unless we want what's best for us. But that's just part of it's the nature of freedom. And there's a paradox there. And so sometimes it's a little bit difficult to understand, which is why I'm so grateful for folks like you who write books on these things, because Americans really need to understand these issues. So we're out of time, but I just want to say thanks for being my guest, and thank you, Mark David Hall, for the book, Did America Have a Christian Founding? And good luck with it. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Eric.
Like a king without a castle, like a queen without a throne, I'm an early morning lover.
Hey there, folks. It must be that Christmas season. That song reminds us it's Christmas season. Alvin, I've got a challenge for my audience at this time of year.
That's good.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
This is a big challenge, folks. Are you ready for this question? Now, you got to be honest. Listen carefully and tell me the truth, or tell yourself the truth. If you could go back in time to 1850, okay, this is a machine. You can go back in time to 1850, and you could free a slave. But it would cost you, I don't know, $1,000 to free a slave. But you go back in time, there's no charge for that. A human being who is in slavery right now in 1850, you can go back there and free them and change their lives forever. But it'll cost you $1,000. Would you do it? Most people would say $1,000 is a lot. But you know what? You're talking about I could actually free someone from slavery and give them decades of freedom and change their – wow. Like that's just what about 500? Can I do – if I could afford 500, be okay, 500. In fact, you know what? We'll make it $250. Would you do it? I think most people would be like, I think I could scrape up $250. If that's just amazing. You mean like free them forever from slavery? And we would say, yeah, forever. Well, this is not a joke. There is real slavery, the horrible kind. We're not talking metaphorical. We're not talking about anything other than the kind of slavery you think of when you think of the 1850s or 40s in this country. The wicked abomination of slavery was defeated principally by Christians who said that it is evil to do this. The Bible tells us that this is wicked. You'll often hear people say the Bible or religion is used to justify slavery. That's basically nonsense. Just because somebody says in the name of the Bible, whatever. The bottom line is the abolitionists were most of them very, very serious Christians who were Bible thumpers. You can watch the movie Amistad by Steven Spielberg. It's real clear. So today,
people who have a different worldview. It's not a biblical worldview. It is a radical Muslim worldview in Africa are enslaving other people. It is horrible. They rape them. They enslave them. I don't want to get into the details, folks, but I'm telling you, it's real. And we can free them because of CSI. That's why I'm telling you about it. Christian Solidarity International has been doing this, has been freeing slaves over there. And I know that if you could go back in time, you'd do it. So let me tell you, would you do it for $250 right now? Maybe you only have $50. Would you give $50 toward that? Would you get your family involved and say, let's as a family pool our money together and give $250 to Christian Solidarity International? You go to MetaxasTalk.com and you give, you'll see the banner at MetaxasTalk.com. I'm going to give you a phone number, but I want to challenge you folks. This is real. I'm not giving you all the details, but we've talked about it on other shows. This is real. This is happening. And when we don't do anything, you kind of have to wonder, well, what if I were in slavery? Would I want somebody to give what they could, to give a few bucks, to pool together? Wouldn't I want people to do that? Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. These are real people, many of them Christians, many of them women and children who've been horribly enslaved. And we are partnering with Christian Solidarity International. There's all kinds of stuff that we give you to thank you. I'm not talking about that right now. Right now, I'm talking about what you do. It doesn't matter what you give. Give what God puts on your heart. This is important. Thank you, and God bless you.
If you would like to contact CSI, dial 888-253-3522. That's 888-253-3522.
Early morning light. I got my guitar right before me, strumming a beautiful sound, watching it coming down.